This is Tracy Hales-Vass with Right on Four Corners on KSJE 90.9 FM. Today I'm again talking with Jacqueline Loring about her other book, Vietnam Veterans Unbroken, Conversations on Trauma and Resiliency.
Yes, this is a very different book. The chemo theater book, I just kind of was in the right place at the right time to get involved in that that project. But the Vietnam veteran book, my husband is a Vietnam veteran in country Vietnam. He was there during the Tet Offensive in 1968. He is a medical technologist who worked as a medic in Saigon. And so I have been involved and aware of issues with Vietnam veterans for a very, very long time. But I also write poetry and plays, and
right.
I had written a bunch of things about my feeling about Vietnam and stories about people surviving the peace after Vietnam. But I never really published any of them. They're just kind of things that I'd write and keep in my computer.
Mm-hmm.
But in 2012, my husband really kind of got on me about, I work as a book editor, so I had worked with a lot of people to have their books published. And he finally said to me, you know what, it's about time you did something about your own work about Vietnam. And so the following year, I was very fortunate to have a book, The History of Bearing Children, which is a poetry mm-hmm. book that I say is one family surviving the peace after Vietnam. And I discovered from that people were really very interested in what a wife or the family of a veteran would have to say.
Mm-hmm.
And that really surprised me. And then my husband and another man were talking about somebody ought to write a book about all of their stories. And so I was still on Cape Cod, and so I thought, well, nobody else here is a writer, so I might as well, you know, do that. And I thought what I would do is maybe get four guys and ask them their story, put it together in like a little chapbook, and go to Kinko's or Staples and have it bound, and then just give it back to them, leave it at the non-vet center in Cape Cod.
Mm-hmm.
But by the time I had interviewed one or two or three of them, I realized that it was too big a story.
Yes.
It wasn't to be a chapbook. It needed to be a book.
Mm-hmm.
And so the book contains the stories of 17 veterans, one of them being a nurse. And the book itself is divided into four sections, before Vietnam. And this is really an unusual, what was the word the agents used to, untraditional. An untraditional way to tell this story.
Yes.
The first is before they go to Vietnam. So you get to know them as kids. You get to know them getting out of high school, what they were going to be, what they were going to do. And then the second chapter is immediately coming home from Vietnam. So I don't spend time in Vietnam with
right.
them except as they remember their stories.
Mm-hmm.
And so you get to hear what happened to them, who accepted them, who didn't. How they were shunned, how they took that on. The third section is the past 40 years, what they did with their lives, their trials, their tribulations. All of the veterans are very, very candid about
yes.
their stories.
Yes.
And the fourth section is about resiliency.
Mm-hmm.
It's about how they individually came to the people that they are today. And every single veteran wanted the book to be a hand forward to new veterans and their families, that it's not necessary to take one step forward. There's no reason to get into a negative kind of lifestyle. There
right.
are options.
Right.
And even if the first, I mean, most of Vietnam veterans, it was 20 years before they ever talked about Vietnam, 30
right.
years before they ever got any support.
Right.
So what the non-vets are trying to say to the newer veterans, you don't have to wait 20 years. You don't have to wait 30 years. You don't have to go through multiple marriages and jobs. There are options, and here are things that we would tell you if we were sitting in a room with you. That's so powerful.
It's so powerful. And one of the key ingredients, I think, in here is that they all, in the book, found help by talking to other people. And they really encouraged other veterans to talk about it.
They encouraged the newer veterans not to wait 20 years.
Right.
The opportunities are here. There are counseling places. There are rap groups where veterans talk to each other. There are many, many resources. And they encourage the newer veterans, men or women, to take that opportunity. One of the things that I found was just amazing that I didn't really realize ahead of time was that the newer veterans, I've had this said to me four or five times by newer veterans, Afghan, Iraq, Bosnia, that they thank the Vietnam veterans for the struggles that they went through, because the newer veterans now have this diagnosis of post-traumatic stress.
Right, right.
They have these opportunities to get into counseling.
Yes.
People understand what rap groups are. They understand that veterans need to speak to veterans.
Yes.
But the other thing is that that word post-traumatic stress and what it means. Now, we the families, the wives, the families, the community members, understand that there is such a thing as post-traumatic stress. We as a community accept that, those set of words,
mm-hmm.
and understand what it means we have to do to help them.
Right.
Because back when my husband, when we first got married in 70 and 71 and 80, I always knew that Vietnam had something to do with what was going on in our house. But my husband never spoke about it.
Mm-hmm.
And if I tried to get my husband to speak about if he thought something that went on in Vietnam was affecting our relationship, he would just get very angry. But nowadays, newer veterans believe that the Vietnam veterans have given them the opportunity, because of all they went through, to be healthier. And I just find that to be an amazing, amazing thing.
It is.
So although the Vietnam veterans had a harder time, the newer veterans may have an easier time. Doesn't mean that what happened to them, what happened to them in Afghanistan or wherever their new war was, wasn't traumatic. It's
exactly.
Just that the opportunities to get some help to deal with it, there are more of those opportunities. And I hope my book is one. I hope that wives and children, I mean, children of Vietnam veterans are in their 40s and 50s.
Right.
And many of them I talk to say that they're just beginning to understand that their life was different.
Mm-hmm.
Because their father or their mother was in Vietnam.
Right.
That's an amazing statement.
It is. I mean, I'm of the age where many of my friends went to Vietnam. Many didn't return. And it was, I don't think I realized how traumatic the coming home was, even though I know what happened or what didn't happen. The book really revealed to me how we neglected the vets coming home from Vietnam.
I heard repeatedly people say how they felt the most discriminated against, the feeling of being discriminated against was worse by World War II veterans.
Yes, that was.
And I know that doesn't sit well with a lot of people. People that I've spoken to, that's the one piece of the book that I get a lot of blowback about.
I was surprised to read that.
I'm not saying that they are. Yeah.
Right. They'd go to the VFW and would be rejected.
Right, and it was the Moose and the Elk Club and each of the clubs that their fathers belonged to.
Right.
And many of the veterans in the book came from like mill families, and they had spent their growing up years going to whatever the club was on the corner of the road for Friday night fish fries and for dinners and for sporting events. It was a lot to do with the family, how the family came together, and the fathers used those the VFW and others as a place where they would go and they would socialize with their veteran friends and they would have a drink. And many of these guys told me that when they came home, that's the first thing they thought was going to happen.
Right.
That they were going to go to the bar with their father. They were going to be, maybe everybody else didn't understand, but certainly World War II and the Korean vets understood. They thought they would be have a drink with them and have a toast to coming home. And instead, they were discriminated against. They weren't accepted.
Oh, that's such a sad thing.
They were told, you know, that they were drug addicts and they were alcoholics and they were too loud. And so what could have been a safety place for them turned out not to be.
That's right. And they, that
was very sad to learn.
Some told them that they lost their war, and that was very sad. I like that you covered before and after and didn't go back over some of the traumas of the war itself. Some of them brought some things up, but we didn't have to go through that with them again. The important part was who they were, who these guys were, and who they were before and after.
Yes, because I want people to realize that the book is about resiliency.
Right.
It's not my place to write a book about Vietnam.
Right.
That's their story. What I care about is what happened to them and their families and their communities as the years went by.
Right.
And I joke every once in a while that if I got a grant from someplace, I'd write a companion book to this,
mm-hmm.
Written by the families, by the wives and the children.
Oh yeah.
Because I have five children, and two of them frequently ask me, have there been any research studies on Agent Orange?
Right.
That they feel that the children of Vietnam veterans that they know all have some kind of autoimmune issue on in their adult lives. And, you know, one of my daughters has done a lot of research, and it's only within the last year or so that, and like I say, these kids are closing in on 50 years old,
mm-hmm.
and the there's only just beginning to be some research studies about what Agent Orange might be doing done to their fathers or mothers, and is doing to them.
Right,
and you just don't hear much about that.
No,
I speak in a bunch of places, and, you know, if you ever had something going on up where you are, I'd be glad to come up.
Okay.
People come up and talk to me all the time and say, you know, my father never talked about Vietnam, and then he killed himself.
Or right.
My father never talked about Vietnam, and then he got divorced from my mother, and I never saw him too much after that. Or my father only just a couple of years ago told me a little bit about whatever it is. And that's so destructive to a person's life when they suddenly hear all of this just truly amazing bravery.
Right.
And triumphs and struggles and resiliency, things that they never knew about their parent the whole time they were growing up, and suddenly at 45 or 50, they're learning this.
Right.
I think you know, I would love to sit down and start to work on the companion book. It's just that this one took me so long.
I bet it took a while. And you sat down with each of these men, right?
Repeatedly.
Yes
repeatedly.
Oh, amazing.
The first set of go rounds, many of them were very, very hesitant to talk to me.
Mm-hmm.
But the more I interviewed people, and the more I talked to them, and the more they got to know me. First of all, I'm not a veteran, and second, I'm a woman.
Right.
So talking to me was just, it was like, I haven't talked to my wife, why would I talk to you?
Right.
But the more they got to know me, the more they seemed willing to tell me their story. So that was in 2012.
Mm-hmm.
By the time it got to be 2014 and 15, they were really comfortable with talking to me. You know, comfortable in talking about a subject that's uncomfortable.
Right.
But and one of the men, I asked him, that's in the book too, I asked him to fill out a questionnaire and talk to me, and he was like, not me. I'm not talking to you. I'm not putting anything down on paper. You want to hear my story, you sit in that chair until I finish telling you the whole story.
Right.
Or don't. If you don't want to hear the whole story the way I want to tell it, then I'm not going to talk to you at all.
So you had
to
transcribe
to sit with him.
Wow, yes. Yeah, you captured.
Yes, I had to transcribe the whole thing.
Amazing. Wow.
That's a time-consuming. Although now I hear that there's software programs, so if I ever did it again, I would use that. But I wanted to be absolutely positive that I didn't write this book, that I
right.
didn't sit down and go, tell their story.
Right.
Everything that's in the book is their story.
And you can tell that by their different voices.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the story that people relate to the most, that people ask me about after they've read the book or get in touch with me. I just met a man a couple of nights ago, and his was the one that disturbed him the most was the nurse.
Yes.
And he said the fact that the photograph of her is her in pigtails and freckles.
Right.
And so you get to know her becoming a nurse and taking these adventures, and then you read her poetry and
yes.
you start to read how difficult coming home had been for her, has been for her, and the number of suicide attempts and
yes.
her struggle day by day to ward off the demons from Vietnam. And that would affect people.
Her poetry is amazing.
One of my good friends.
Oh, yeah. And
there are several others who are poets besides
right.
the ones I only used, really, him, her, and Preston Hood.
Right.
But Gary Rafferty is just, he's one of the best poets I know. But it didn't work to add poetry. He
mm-hmm.
is so eloquent that adding poetry into his remembrances didn't seem to work for me.
But his section there is very eloquent anyway.
I think so. I'm glad you noticed that.
Yes, I did. So do you like to read something from Vietnam veterans?
Yes. I have a short piece by Gary Rafferty.
Oh, good.
So I can read that to you. Okay. This is in the second section. So this is after he came home.
Mm-hmm.
I really liked the fire department. I didn't recognize it at the time, but after Nam, I was a serious adrenaline junkie. The fire service and I just fit. Vietnam gave me an oh shit yardstick, which was much greater than the average firefighter's. It took a lot to get me nervous. I was used to being in uniform, in the company of men, and I was a harsh, if accurate, judge of character. My superiors said I lacked tact. I thought they lacked intelligence. Then again, they didn't know that I had a number in my head, a number of lives I had to save just to break even. If I had found the words to tell them, it still would have been impossible for them to understand. They would have thought I was crazy, and in no small way, I surely was.
That's beautiful.
Can I read you one more really short one?
Please.
This is the one that I get the most immediate reaction to. This is a man named Matt Ribas, and this is in his first section. He says, I came home from Vietnam withdrawn, very withdrawn. It took me 15 years to come out of that shell. After Nam, I was on my own. I played guitar and sang in nightclubs, and I clowned. I clowned professionally. It was a great thing for me to live in anonymity. It let my soul breathe. I could go up to a little kid and not worry if his parent had a hand grenade.
Yeah, here he was a clown and had those concerns.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing.
It's a marvelous picture of him getting out of one of those
yes.
those little clown cars.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, that's another thing about the book. There's a photograph to go with every... Each veteran has four sections in the book, and there's a photograph to go with each section.
Right.
And I think that helps, because you get to see that they're people. They're just people. They're just like the rest of us, that we're given this incredible burden to take with them along their own journey.
It was a very moving book. It will stick with me for some time.
Well, I hope what it does is it gives people who are not veterans an opportunity to do more than say thank you for your service.
Right.
Yesterday was Veterans Day, and my husband and I went to, he's a member of the Military Society of Purple Heart, and we went to a breakfast, and four men came in and decided not to sit with us because they were in a family group, but they came in and said hello first, and as they were going out, I heard somebody say to them, thank you for your service.
Mm.
And that's wonderful. That's wonderful. And people have paid for my husband's breakfast, you know, different things. But I think we owe them more than that.
Yes.
I think one of the men in the book says, instead of saying, thank you for your service, say, how do you feel about your service?
Oh, good.
Leave the door open for them to talk.
Mm-hmm.
Make yourself available. It's not easy to sit and listen to a Vietnam veteran who will talk to you or wants to talk to you, talk about their service or what it has meant to their life. But we owe them that.
We do.
The rest of us stayed home and,
right. You
know, I was a nurse at a hospital in Cape Cod while all that was going on.
Mm-hmm.
We owe it to them, and we owe it to the new veterans to let them know that we'd be willing to hear what they had to say if they're comfortable enough. And if not, the least we can do is thank them for their service.
Absolutely.
So buy them lunch.
Right. Pay for their coffee. So Northampton Hospital seems to be a center for these guys, and they go every year?
Many of them have. Because there are more and more newer veterans who need services, and the program itself has not, up until now, had not enlarged. It was still the same. It's a separate building on the campus of the VA hospital in Leeds, Massachusetts.
Ah.
The vets call it Northampton. But they are, at the moment, I did one of the presentations when I was in New England on a book tour in June and July. They're enlarging the services, so which is a wonderful thing.
That's great.
Yeah, my husband has been really concerned that there isn't anything in the Southwest.
I was just going to ask
like
that.
Like Northampton. Yeah, he talks to veterans all the time, and he has talked to them about what's available here, and at the VA hospital here in Albuquerque, those services aren't available there. There are therapy and there are some services, but the intensive service that was available at Northampton to him in the 80s and 90s is just not available here.
That's too bad. Hopefully some people will read this book and realize how important it is.
Wouldn't that be wonderful?
Yes, let's hope.
Wouldn't that be wonderful?
It can happen.
It sounds so little after what they have they have given us.
Right.
To provide them with the services they need to be resilient,
no kidding.
Go on with the rest of their life.
Yes.
And what is that? What is the statistic I heard a couple of days ago was 20 veterans commit suicide every day.
Oh my gosh!
That's outrageous.
That's outrageous.
We cannot allow that.
No.
So yes. So it would be a tribute to them if people read this book.
Right.
And said we have to do more.
Right. I hope that will happen. So now you have a website, JacquelineMarieDoring.com, that people can see.
Right.
What you're up to, and they can buy the Vietnam Veterans Unbroken book, same places as the other one?
Yes. It's published by McFarlane and Company Publishers.
Okay.
And they're one of the leading independent publishers of nonfiction books. So you could go to the McFarlane webpage, or I always want people to go to their local bookstores.
Right.
Because you can always order it from, you know, a mom and pop bookstore.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also on Amazon and Barnes & Noble.
Great. Well, very good. I really appreciate it.
And if they wanted, they could meet me someplace or they could send it to me and I'd be happy to sign it for them.
And they can contact you through your website.
They can, yes.
Okay. Very good.
And I'm also available. I have a hour-long PowerPoint presentation that includes all the veterans' photographs and a discussion of each of them.
Oh.
And seven of the different veterans in the book are available to join me if there was money to do that. Pauline Hebert, who is a nurse in Preston Hood, Gary Rafferty, and Mr. Watkins, they all have books that are published. So they're speakers. They go and they speak about Vietnam and places.
Oh.
So if somebody wanted to have me, I'd be happy to come alone. But if they were interested in me, my husband, like I said, was an in-country Vietnam veteran that was wounded during Tet. He would be available to talk. So we'd be happy to go to a conference or go to a college. I understand that in the high schools and the colleges, Vietnam is hardly ever talked about, hardly ever written about. So we would be really, really happy to discuss this book and what the veterans have gone through if people were interested.
That'd be great. That'd be great. So they can find you again at your website.
Right.
Jacqueline Murray.
Right. And my email is at gmail.com.
Okay.
So once you have all my names, then it's just at Gmail.
Perfect.
Yes, I'd be happy to talk to people.
Great. Well, thank you so much for writing the books and for what you've done. I appreciate it.
Okay, so thank you so much for being in touch with me.
Mm-hmm.
I just feel honored to be able to talk about this book and to promote veterans issues.
Yes.
So thank you so much.
Thank you. That was Jacqueline Murray Loring talking about her very important book, Vietnam Veterans Unbroken, Conversations on Trauma and Resiliency. This is Tracy Hales Vass with Right on Four Corners on KSJE 90.9 FM in Farmington, New Mexico.